Springfield's Talk 104.1. I'm Nick Reed, author of the week, sponsored by ABC Books on North Glenstone. We, of course, have the on-demand section up. You can get to that by going to ksgf.com or the KSGF app. You can hear all our past author of the weeks, and of course, those books you can get at or through ABC Books on North Glenstone, just south of Kearney. And the author this week is author of the book Bully of Asia, Why China's Dream is the New Threat to World Order. Stephen Mosier is with us. I want to thank you for being with us this morning. And, you know, it doesn't seem as if the focus of China being a potential threat or future threat is anything that's necessarily new, but it just really seems so much more prevalent now than it has, at least in my lifetime, or more likely as they apparently ramp things up a bit. How much more danger are we in today, if that's a good word to use, compared to where we've been in the past in our relationship with China?
Well, I think the threat has been growing over the past few decades, but one thing that has brought it home, Nick, is the fact that they released a deadly virus on the world. And with the death toll running at 6.5 million people and around the world and hundreds of millions falling ill, I think that public opinion in the United States is turned dramatically against China over the last couple of years. And we see that in the polls where people now view, 80% of Americans now view China as a threat. And it's quite reasonable they should, because the Chinese Communist Party made them sick, and it made them sick deliberately.
It was just not that far back, several days ago, we learned because of a Fox News report with Brett Baer that evidently a number of expert virologists had come to Fauci, and they had this meeting, and they were, you know, saying this has all the hallmarks of something that was developed by man, maybe not from scratch, but certainly in its evolution, as opposed to it looking as if it was something that just was a natural occurrence. And by time meetings were done, everyone came out on the same page, and that was the lab theory was nothing but paranoia. And I guess for me, one of the reasons that I worry a bit more about China than I used to is because it appears as if we have people in our country who want to protect China, that they want to protect their reputation, they want to protect their interests, and that worries me to some degree. Is that as prevalent as it seems, or am I overblowing it?
No, I mean, you're right on both points. The first is that back in February of 2020, we knew that this had come from a lab. I was writing stories about that in the New York Post, which got banned on Twitter and Facebook as a conspiracy theory. But privately, according to those emails that you mentioned that I saw actually 6 months ago, privately, Fauci's virologists were telling him, yeah, this thing looks like it came from a lab, Anthony. What are we going to do? And, of course, the message that went out from Fauci, who controls a budget of $6 billion a year and funds much of the virology research that takes place around the world, was, no, it didn't come from the lab. Do not say it came from the lab. Say that was a conspiracy theory. And that's exactly what Richard Ebright and EcoHealth Alliance said in the letter that they drafted to Nature and to other scientific publications. And I believe they knew at the time that it wasn't true. Certainly, EcoHealth Alliance knew at the time it wasn't true. Why? Because they were the conduit that Dr. Anthony Fauci was using to send money and technology to China. Let me repeat that. He was sending money to China through an organization called EcoHealth Alliance to fund research taking dangerous coronaviruses and making them more infectious and more deadly to human beings. There are scientific reports that were filed by EcoHealth Alliance about the research in the Wuhan lab with Anthony Fauci and with the NIH saying this was happening. So we know it was happening, and we know that the reason why the cover-up took place was because of the connection with the U.S. government, specifically through Dr. Anthony Fauci's shop. So that's part of the cover-up. But the larger problem is this. that they've been, the Chinese Communist Party has been buying friends and winning influence in the United States for decades. And they basically use three techniques. They're very clear about this. They use gold, they use drugs, and they use sex, whatever is appropriate under the circumstances, depending on who they want to compromise. And in some cases, in fact, in a famous case that we're all familiar with, I think they probably used all three. Eric Swalwell, of course, was sleeping with a Chinese spy by the name of Fang Fang, who has since gone back to China, but Congressman Swalwell continues to be on the Intelligence Committee of the U.S. Congress in the House of Representatives, which is inexplicable to me. But there are many Fang Fangs. There are many bags of gold being passed over from Chinese Communist Party operatives in the United States and other countries to compromise federal and state officials. And the Chinese laugh openly about this. I've seen videos where a senior Chinese official says, yes, we give them one bag of money, and if one bag isn't enough, we give them two bags, and if two bags isn't enough, we give them three bags. That's standard operating procedure on the part of the Chinese Communist Party. They spread corruption wherever they go. And unfortunately, there are a lot of people in this country, in Washington, D.C., and Wall Street, and other places, who have allowed themselves to be corrupted.
We're talking with our author of the week, Stephen Mosier. He's president of Population Research Institute and a leading authority on China. The book is Bully of Asia. I remember it was around the time I first started getting interested in politics, and I didn't have a lot of money because I was young, but I got basic cable to watch C-SPAN because then Senator Fred Thompson was doing hearings on potential Chinese influence and campaign donations to the Clinton campaign, and learning about literally, in some instances, testimony of bags of cash being delivered at that period of time. I mean, when we hear these instances of apparent covering for China or accusations of xenophobia towards people who call out China, is it all money? Is it just simply boiled down to either blackmail, maybe with sex and drugs, or that these people are just paid off?
Well, I think it's really all of the above. And the Chinese Communist Party is open about how they operate. They will go into a third world country, and that needs financial help. And that third world country may have approached the United States or the World Bank for help in improving its infrastructure. And we will say things like, yes, you need to hold free elections. You need to have the rule of law in place. You need to allow freedom of speech, freedom of the press. And China will say, you don't need to do any of those things. You simply need to take our money and then do what we say in terms of foreign policy from now on. And by the way, if you have oil or other resources we need, then you sell them to us at preferential prices. So China, when I say the Chinese Communist Party spreads corruption wherever it goes, it is basically a lawless organization that is interested first, last, and always in increasing its power and lining its own pockets. I mean, that's what communism is all about. It's not about being the vanguard of the proletariat or speaking on behalf of the masses. It is a way of concentrating power in the hands of a tiny oligarchy and making them fabulously wealthy. Communist dictators always die as billionaires, as we know. So that's what the Chinese Communist Party does on a daily basis. Now, we have to distinguish between the party and the Chinese people. The Chinese Right. people are the first and foremost victims of the Chinese Communist Party. The Chinese people have been exploited by party leaders for decades now. They work for a few dollars a day in sweatshops making goods for export, and the officials who run those factories live in mansions and send their children overseas for higher education and drive, you know, BMWs and all the rest. So there's a tiny exploiting class in China consisting of party officials, and then there's the rest of the people. And that's not a system of government that we want to see spread around the world. It is fundamentally opposed to the ideas that America was founded on, namely freedom of speech, assembly, association, constitutional protection of rights, the rule of law, and so forth. And the Chinese Communist Party sees all those things as threats to its rule. It has actually published documents saying that the rule of law that civil society, that religious freedom are threats to continued Communist Party rule. And they are.
We're talking with Stephen Mosier, author of Bully of Asia. We see so many people that are in the entertainment industry, whether they're actors or athletes, that seem to be very pro-China. They're very protecting of China's reputation. The Olympics, to me, it seems as if the international community, or at least the International Olympic Committee, is allowing China to use the Olympics as a way to soften its image. When we look at people like LeBron James, who I know has his own shoe line in China, and some of these others, how important are these celebrities to China's plan to continue expanding its influence over the world and the United States?
Well, I think they're very, very important, because the Chinese Communist Party spends tens of billions of dollars each year on information warfare, far more than we spend. I mean, we spend money, you know, the Voice of America has a budget of, you know, $100 million, and it broadcasts news and information about the United States around the world. And we also set up, I was on the commission, the presidential commission that set up Radio Free Asia back in the 1990s, and we broadcast news and information into China about what's happening in China. So we're sort of a free radio service on the model of Radio Liberty and Radio Free Europe that we use so effectively to bring down the Soviet Union. But those are tiny efforts compared to the literal billions of dollars that the Chinese Communist Party spends on propaganda. The party says openly, we just have to read what the party says. A lot of people don't do that. Mm-hmm. I do. I read it in Chinese. They say we have three magic weapons. The first magic weapon is propaganda. The second magic weapon is united front tactics, where we burrow into foreign organizations and we seize control of them and use them for our purposes. And the third magic weapon is the People's Liberation Army. And they use them in that order. They use propaganda first to soften up attitudes towards China and to hide things like the genocide of the Uyghurs and the tearing down of Catholic Christian churches and the persecution of Tibetans and the crushing of Hong Kong and all of the other human rights abuses that go on in China. And they use people like LeBron James, who makes millions in China, as kind of front men to hide, as window dressing, to hide the reality, the brutal reality of what's happening in China on a daily basis. Hollywood has gone, you know, to China in a big way, thinking this is the biggest cinema market, the biggest movie-going market in the world. But what's happened now to Hollywood is we find the Chinese Communist Party doesn't approve very many Hollywood movies to be shown in China because it wants to develop its own movie industry. And so Hollywood is gradually being shut out. And so it doesn't matter how low you bow, how many times you kowtow to China, eventually you're going to be shut back out of the country after they've mastered whatever technology or art form that you have some expertise in.
Is there any hope for the United States? I mean, it seems as if right now, again, the leaders, whether it be in popular culture or in government, are either unaware or they don't care that this is happening, perhaps even support it because, you know, they'll be in the good graces of the Chinese Communist government if they eventually do take over the United States. Is that inevitable, or is there hope that we can stop this?
Well, there's always hope. And we had actually to go back to 2020. From 2016 to 2020, we had a very tough-minded policy towards China, which had set China back on its heels. We were aggressively trying to stop cyber espionage and traditional espionage in this country. We were putting tariffs on Chinese-made goods. We were putting pressure on them to stop devaluing their currency to make those goods even cheaper. We were pressing them on human rights across the board. In fact, right before President Trump left office, a couple days before he left office, it was declared that what was happening to the 12 million Turkish-speaking Uyghurs in the far west of China was genocide, and it is genocide. So China was on the defensive. And, of course, over the last year, much of that has been reversed, and I'm afraid the rest is being threatened as well by an administration that has been horribly compromised by China. But can we win? Of course we can win. We can win by using the same approach that President Reagan used back in the 1980s to weaken and ultimately cause the collapse of the Soviet Union. We have to deny science and technology to China. That'll be tough because of all the cyber espionage and cyber attacks, but we can do it. We have to keep Chinese spies out of the research labs of our major research universities. We also have to deny capital to the Chinese Communist Party. And Wall Street is beginning to wake up to the fact that China's a giant Ponzi scheme, and it's not quite so easy to make money in China as they were promised. People who invested in real estate in China are losing money now, hand over fist. And finally, we have to stay strong ourselves and relocate our supply chains from China to countries that respect our values and institutions. We should be buying goods made in India or the Philippines or South Korea, Taiwan, Mexico, Canada, the United States, instead of China. And you know, you can do that. Japan is doing that now. Japan has a multi-billion dollar program to encourage its companies to close factories in China and move them out of that country. Not necessarily back to Japan. They can go to the Philippines, they can go to Taiwan, they go anywhere else in the world. Tokyo says, just leave China now. And we need the same kind of program to decouple our economies from China. And if we did those things, the Chinese economy would collapse, and the world would continue to be a world of, you know, the world order that we established after World War II, which is generally a better deal for the world's people than a world under the control of the Chinese Communist Party would be.
The book, Bully of Asia: Why China's Dream is the New Threat to World Order. Stephen Mosier, author of the week, sponsored by ABC Books on North Glenstone. Thank you so much for this sobering book and your time with us this morning.
Good to be with you.
Springfield's Talk 104.1. I'm Nick Reed.